Hey, VBackLink family, it's Lily, and I was wondering if I could ask you a really quick favor. If the VBackLink has ever helped you, encouraged you, or taught you something along your birth after cesarean journey, I would be so grateful if you would vote for us for Best Podcast in NoCo Style's Best of NoCo Awards. As a Northern Colorado born and raised mama myself, this is especially meaningful for me. It takes less than a minute to vote, and we've linked it right in the show notes. Every vote helps more families discover the VBackLink, bringing more awareness to VBack education and support. Thank you so much for cheering on our little team. We appreciate you more than you know. So go to the show notes, click the link to vote, and then come back to this episode for another incredible episode.
You are listening to the VBackLink podcast. I am your host today, Paige, and usually I am joined by my co-host, Lily, but she is at a birth helping a VBA2C mama as her doula. And we are cheering for them. We miss you, Lily. We cannot wait to hear all about it when you come back. And today we are joined by our friend Alex. Alex is located in Canada, and she is a nurse practitioner. She is married to a doctor. So we talk a lot about the perspective from two medical providers navigating the VBAC journey, getting educated and learning more about VBAC to shift from a repeat cesarean is the safest in a hospital to, well, actually, maybe VBAC is really good for mom and baby. And maybe we actually don't feel comfortable in the hospital. Maybe a birth center is what we feel comfortable with. And navigating some evidence, navigating some conversations with a maternal fetal medicine doctor and some consults. One of those specifically, she talked about uterine scar thickness and having an ultrasound to measure the scar thickness as a predictor of if you will have a uterine rupture or not, or if you will have a successful VBAC or not. It's a little bit more of a nuanced topic than we realize, because you might have heard, oh, your scar is too thin, or you might be presented with, oh, we need to have an ultrasound to know if labor is safe for you. And that kind of counseling can feel really scary, because that makes a lot of sense. If we can measure the thickness of the scar, then, oh, yeah, like I want to know that. But some studies, while they do show an association between thinner scars and rupture risk, it's overall really inconsistent what this research is saying, because these studies use different measurement techniques, they use different parts of the uterus, and they have different cutoff values. And their definition of high-risk categories, like some have 2 millimeters that they consider the high-risk category, and others have totally different measurements for that. And some even admit, oh, maybe our categories should include different measurements. So ACOG overall says that ultrasonographic measurements of the lower uterine segment cannot be used to counsel regarding TOLAC. It's just because the evidence isn't there. It's just not reliable to be a predicting factor. So I hope that's helpful for you. And we will get into Alex's story. Another thing we talk about, the length of VBAC labor. This is why we're here, to provide different kinds of stories, because birth is different for everybody. It's such an individual journey. Something that happened to one person is so different to the next person. We're encouraging you on your journey. We love you and we're cheering for you. And we will be back with Alex right after our intro.
Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBackLink podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had 2 CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
Okay, welcome back. And without further
welcome back, everybody. We are here with Alex, and I'm going to read a little bit about her, and then we will turn the time over to you. Alex is married to her wonderful husband, Levi, just celebrating 6 years of marriage. They are a healthcare couple. Levi works as a doctor and Alex as a nurse practitioner. They have two kiddos, their first Shepherd and their daughter, Bridget. And Alex is located in Canada. So I cannot wait to hear everything that she's about to share. Because when I was reading through her submission, it was so powerful that just through the little snippets, I was getting chills. So the floor is yours, Alex, and you're free to share all of the details that I cannot wait to hear about.
You're so sweet, Paige. Okay, well, I guess I can start with just getting pregnant with my first. We were very, very blessed. That went very smoothly. It happened essentially right away. I would say don't follow those like apps for your fertile window because that totally wasn't right. But when I tracked, then we got her and we got pregnant right away. And for the most part, pregnancy was great. Other than I did have hyperemesis, gravidarum is the medical term. I would actually argue I had like the most mild form of that or the most severe form of nausea vomiting because I have some friends that even had it worse than me. But I did have to go off work even. During pregnancy because it was just constant and throwing up in a hospital is the grossest thing that you can do, I swear. Anyway, I was planning like a vaginal birth for my first. I actually remember looking and filling out a birth plan and I had said in my birth plan, like, epidural, please, I can't manage pain well at all. And then when I was showing that to my doc, who I was going to be through a family doctor, I don't know how it works necessarily where everybody is, but in Canada, in Alberta, you can go through family doctors that just practice deliveries. They're not obstetricians, but they can deliver in hospital or wherever you want. Anyway, she ended up asking me, like, where do you feel your kicks? And I said, oh, I actually feel them lower down. And it was my first pregnancy. I had no idea. She said, oh, let me grab the ultrasound. And she did. And sure enough, he was breech. And he had been in the same position the whole time. So me, like many of your other podcasters, did all the breech things, every single thing under the sun. I looked very silly at the pool, like jumping and then flipping my legs, like plopping onto the water. I made a few geriatric friends go into the pool every morning. It was awesome. But no, he did not flip. So we had a consult with an obstetrician and my husband and I were agreeable to doing an ECV, which I think probably most of your listeners know what that stands for. And I think the first one was at 37 and 5. And they just did it. I was basically there on the bed and the obstetrician, you know, put some jelly all over my belly and kind of reefed. I was nervous about the pain. It really didn't hurt. It wasn't a painful experience for me, but it did not work. So then she essentially said, okay, we'll schedule for a C-section. And I had listened to, I think at the time, there is some evidence for ECV success if you are using a tocolytic or epidural or spinal, just to kind of relax things more. So I said, would you try one more time after I get the spinal for the C-section, just in case? And then if I do, just let it wear off and I'll go home. And she did. My husband tells the story a lot better than I do, but she kind of spun her hands all the way around and everybody in the room gasped because everybody thought that he turned and he didn't. So we proceeded with the C-section. And I was really nervous. Even though it was scheduled, that was just my experience. I remember feeling, just scared, I guess. And despite me having asked the resident and the attending, like, I'll get skin to skin, right? And they said yes. And then there was no reason. I just didn't. They took away my son and they gave him to my husband, which of course was the next best place he could be, but he was, you know, wrapped up in a blanket and a hat on him and everything. And it just felt not quite right. It's probably the best way that I can put it. But I didn't feel sick. I didn't feel, you know, loopy or anything. I felt pretty good. And it wasn't very long until I was moved into recovery and then got to, you know, have my son on my chest and latch and everything like that. But I just kind of throughout the whole thing felt, I guess, deflated. And I think a lot of those feelings did come later as well. But I felt maybe uninvolved in my birth in a way. And not, you know, obviously tons of, like, I mean, you're a C-back mama yourself, right? Like a lot of C-sections don't have to be that way. I think that was just my experience. So it certainly left me yearning and wanting a different experience for our following kids, however many we end up having, I'm not sure. So what I had put in my submission form, I can't remember how far postpartum I was, but I said to my husband, like, I think I would like to try for a VBAC for our next baby, because I don't think I really want to do that again. And he's like, oh, you know, but I don't really think that's the safest thing for the baby. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, you're totally right. I should just put the baby ahead of myself, which I come to find out, obviously, and learn through this podcast and through lots of other amazing resources. That's not necessarily true in a lot of cases, especially if you're an uncomplicated birth and pregnancy. So, yeah, I just kind of dove into the VBAC link and then had lots of passion and still do for all of my friends that have preferences. I have, you know, you hear so many stories of women going through unnecessary inductions or unwanted inductions and then having births that they just don't want. So it's definitely an area that I'm passionate in, though I would say I have no clinical expertise. I'm totally just a participant here. And then I did have a lot of issues with my son postpartum breastfeeding. And I did attribute most of that, you know, he was sleepy after C-section, and then we were encouraged or kind of pushed into supplementing in hospital and so on and so forth. So I ended up exclusively pumping for, I think I stopped at 15 months. And that was probably the thing that required the most discipline in my life for me. So cool experience, but very difficult as well.
That is incredible. Pumping is so hard and exhausting. And for 15 months, like, well done.
Mm, thank
That's
you.
So hard.
Yeah, it was. Just shout out to all the moms that do it, because it's feeding your baby is hard anyway. You slice it, I think, really. But okay, so I had asked my obstetrician that did my C-section. I specifically asked her about VBAC. I had asked for a doctor's appointment. They're like, she'll never see you. You're not even pregnant, lady. Like, what are you? But you can, we'll send her an email and she can respond. So she did. And that was essentially my VBAC consult is what we would call it here. And she just kind of laid out, you know, the parameters for when it's most safe to get pregnant in terms of interdelivery interval, which I think she specified in from her research was 22 to 24 months or so. It's sort of the lowest risk in terms of uterine rupture. And then you don't really gain any decreased risk after that based on the research that she kind of follows it for her patients. So my husband and I timed, we were lucky enough to be able to time kind of our next pregnancy right in that time slot. So my kids are 23 months apart. But through all of the kind of research and listening that I did, I realized I probably want to have an unmedicated birth and be, I don't want to say more involved, but just, I guess more present for me is probably the way that I would put it. And I was also interested in midwifery care, which is another place where it's just funny, not necessarily judgment, but other friends that had home births with midwives, I think I would have quietly in my mind said, oh, you know, I'm not sure I would ever do that. And you know, fast forward a couple of years and I'm right there with them. So I, in Alberta and Canada, the way that works, you just apply to a general stream of midwifery care. And then essentially you get matched to somebody if somebody's available and agrees to take you on. I didn't know that. I just thought, oh, it's a shoe-in for sure. So I was looking around at different midwifery centers, and my one friend had recommended a certain one and said, yeah, they're wonderful. So I was looking through their staff and I thought, oh, okay, my midwife's name is Missy. I said, oh, she looks cool. Like, I think that's who I'll pick. You don't get to pick. But I got an email that matched me to her. It was a really cool godnod. I was like, wow. Like, okay, this was meant to be. If she ever listens to this, she'll laugh. But I had, so I guess, sorry to rewind a little bit. Despite getting pregnant, I started bleeding shortly after. So I thought, oh, okay, this is a chemical pregnancy and we'll just kind of move on. And my husband and I were actually going to an area called Crowsnest Pass to do this ultra marathon that we run every year as a team. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just run. And, you know, it's sad, but it is what it is. So I ended up doing my leg and everything and then came home. And then about a week later, I thought, I'm just feeling kind of sick. Like, I don't feel great. And I took another pregnancy test and it was positive. And I thought for sure I was not pregnant. Like, I was shocked. So I guess probably it was implantation bleeding. But of course, I called my doctor and was like, you know, it could be an ectopic pregnancy. So I sort of went through the whole gambit with that. And that was challenging. Man, before you think you might be having a miscarriage, I think I saw it one way. I don't know if other women could relate, but I just thought you have an early miscarriage or a chemical. Your body just takes care of itself and you kind of move on. And that is absolutely not the case, especially for lots of women. Even having previously had patients come in to emergency and treat them having miscarriages, my perspective really shifted and opened up in terms of, I think, having more empathy for women that go through that, because I had to get my HCG levels done every 2 days, every 48 hours for, I think it was 2 weeks, because my first one was very low and then it wasn't climbing. And it wasn't climbing for a while until, again, another God knot, I went and got prayed over at church and then it started to take off and then the pregnancy was good. So that was, yeah, and a few ultrasounds in there that they can't see anything because it's too early and whatnot. I remember the diagnosis at one point was pregnancy of unknown location. And I thought, how silly is that to have that as a diagnosis? But anyhow, things ended up working out and the pregnancy was sustained. And eventually I felt like I could breathe and kind of move forward with things. But I had gotten that email to have midwifery care. And I remember saying, I'm not sure if I can accept because I don't know if I'm actually pregnant yet. Like, this could be an ectopic pregnancy. This could not be a viable pregnancy. I don't want to take up somebody else's spot. So on my way to my appointment, the day that I was going to meet my midwife, I got a call from them saying, oh, she's full now. And I was literally parked in front of their building. I said, oh my goodness, I'm here. Like, is there any way I can just come inside and maybe meet her? And she was gracious enough to allow that. And then I got in the room and I think I just started crying immediately. She, probably none of it made sense. So she was like, I can tell you really want midwifery care, Alex. So I'll take you on. I'll just kind of move some things around. She's lovely. Very amazing. So that kind of started our relationship. And before I was even pregnant, I had picked the doula that I wanted as well, who is a Christian. She's VBAC Link certified, actually. Yeah, and she's a Christian and had a very similar story, a breech birth for the first and then an unmedicated VBAC for her second. So it just felt like all the stars were aligning. Things were kind of coming or falling into place the way that they needed to.
And that's so comforting. Like, even yeah, those little flickers of just feeling peaceful, that's how you know you're on the right track. Like, I remember in my birth prep, I felt similarly, where I was just like, yes, yes, mm-hmm, yes. And that's how you know, that's how you just know it's right.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because it does come with a lot of uncertainty. Right, all these decisions that you're making, because you're making them for you, but you're also making them for your child and for your family. So, yeah, they felt weighty in a sense, but I definitely felt, just spurred on in the right direction. Like things were kind of unfolding the way that God had intended.
Taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
So, prenatal care was very straightforward. It was lovely. And, you know, in comparison to my previous care, I thought they honestly were both great, but maybe more of a personal relationship with my midwife that I appreciated. And she just had this, like, composure and this assurance. You know, I remember thinking I was going to have to advocate for myself for a VBAC, and she just said, yeah, you're going to have a VBAC. It's going to be great. Oh, this is amazing. This isn't what I've heard at all. So that was great. The one thing that I hadn't been totally sure about was going to be my birth location. And I thought for the majority of my pregnancy, I would have a hospital birth, because I live very close to a hospital, which is, it's just kind of convenient. And my plan was to do a water birth, because I thought, I do not handle pain well at all. I'm going to need some help. I've heard so many stories about how relieving the water was, and, you know, when women are in transition and they just need it and it helps them get through. So I remember even saying to my mom, I don't think I can do this without a tub. Like, I'm going to need a tub. Yeah, okay, sounds good. She had three vaginal and Medicaid births. So that was my plan. And then I think it was about 35 weeks or so. I think it was that. I could be wrong. But my midwife I had been seen by a different midwife, because my midwife was off just for a couple of weeks. And she let me know that the hospital that was my plan to give birth at had banned water birth. She did tell me some of the details. I don't think it was totally a founded scenario, but I'm not in that world. I don't make those calls. But they had taken away that option. So then I felt a little bit stranded, but also grateful that I had time. Like, it wasn't, you know, I wasn't giving birth in a couple of days. I still had, you know, maybe a month or so to think about alternatives. So I wrestled with that for a while, and I didn't even decide until I think I was like almost 39 weeks, I swear, until the decision was finally made. But I kind of let just that float in the background, and I said, we'll come to a decision. But during that time as well, I was around 36 weeks, I can't remember exactly, but my midwife, with all of her clinical skills, had picked up some PACs when she was listening to the Doppler. Those are premature atrial contractions, is what it stands for. Can also be a PVC, a premature ventricular contraction. So she's listening to the baby's heartbeat and just hearing something that was a little bit off. And I didn't know anything about them or what they would mean. But she said we should probably do a BPP and why am I spacing on what's it called when they hook you up to the monitors on your belly?
The NST?
Yeah, an NST, because I don't think I had had one. Yeah, perfect. So she sent me over, got me into a clinic, I think it was the next day, and they have MFMs there. So I went in for the BPP, and the technician was lovely. And at one point she said, and maybe afterwards, because I was pretty far along, she said, maybe afterwards we'll do a vaginal ultrasound and I'll measure your scar thickness. And I said, I don't think we need to do that. She responded right away. We don't have to if you don't want to, but the MFM thought we should. And I just kind of said, I think I'm okay. Yeah, I'm okay. We don't need to do that. So I just kind of politely declined. And when she had come back later, she let me know the MFM had kind of miscalculated my interdelivery window and thought I was a lot closer, I guess, or maybe thought I was under 18 months or something. So it was agreeable to not having that done. But that was normal. And then everything looked good on the BPP. So then we moved to the NST. I had a very lovely nurse sit me down, hook me up, and explain everything that we were doing. And then that was going well, and I think they were seeing some PACs, but they were largely non-concerning and not as frequent as they had previously been. And then the MFM came in to speak with me and said, yeah, this is looking good, and kind of explained the risk. And I thought this was interesting to know, the risk with these PACs versus PVCs. So the PVCs are largely benign. They're not going to cause any issues. But PVCs, if you're having those, babies can flip into a tachycardia, essentially, like a very fast heart rate, which obviously if baby's on the inside, you don't know why that's happening. Likely it's going to be interpreted as distress, and you'll have to kind of move into an emergency or an urgent scenario. But PACs, I guess, don't carry that risk. So he said, it's probably fine. Likely you're going to give birth and the baby won't have that issue anymore. They'll just go away. That's labor and delivery tend to kind of cure that. So that's fine. He said, and, you know, of course you'll be on continuous fetal monitoring and you'll be in the hospital. And I just kind of smiled and he said, no, I don't think he said you're not one of those, but he said something like, no, like, come on. And I don't know that I had said what I do at that point, but I just said, well, you know, and I hadn't listened to your guys' episode on continuous fetal monitoring yet, but I had listened to something about it, kind of, you know, sharing this, not really evidence-based, not that data isn't good. I get it as a clinician, like the more we have, the more we can control and the more we know, but I thought for this, it's not what I need. I don't need that amount of knowledge and control necessarily. So anyhow, I said, no, I don't know. I'm undecided right now because I still was kind of between either it was going to be a different hospital or birth center. For me, I didn't really want to be at home. Everyone cites the mess. And I think that played into it for me. I was like, I just don't want to remember it like in my giving birth on my floor or something. Like for me, when I walk down my hallway, it's not something I want to think about. But it's great if other people do. It just wasn't for me. So he said, well, you know, if you're not on, you know, monitoring and this and that can happen. And eventually he got to the words where, you know, and if you have a rupture and you're not in the hospital, you could die, your baby could die. And just kind of stared at me like, you know, that can happen. And I felt like it was important to keep it respectful, but also kind of share like why, I guess why that wasn't necessary for me. And what I'm trying to think of what I had said exactly. He had said, oh, the scar thickness. Sorry, I skipped over that. He had mentioned like, oh yeah, it would be helpful, but we don't need to do it if you don't want to. And I said, well, is it evidence-based? He's like, well, there's some studies to show that, you know, it could, if your scar is too thin, it could increase your risk of rupture. And I said, oh, okay. Is there enough studies or high quality evidence to change the recommendations and the guidelines of the SOGC? That's what it's called in Canada. Well, no, you're right. It's not, but, and I said, yeah, so I think we can just stick with like, I'm happy to kind of follow what the evidence would suggest in that scenario. And then that's kind of what turned into him saying, well, you're going to be in a hospital, right? And again, I at that point, I didn't say, well, you know, continuous fetal monitoring doesn't really reduce my risk of anything other than maybe some, you know, neonatal seizures at that point, but it's not, I'm not high risk. And at one point he said, well, you are high risk. And I said, no, I'm not high risk. I'm not a high risk pregnancy. So anyway, he ended up leaving. And then the nurse that had hooked me up said, that was amazing. I've never heard anybody advocate for themselves like that. I used to work in labor and delivery. I work here now, but I used to be there. And I love VBAC moms and I love unmedicated birth. And you're going to crush it. You're 100%. You're going to do it. And she just gassed me up so much. She made me feel so confident. And just really kind of made me believe the words that I had just seen. And it was funny because then she had to check my blood pressure and it was so high. It's never been that high in my life because of course I was actually, despite sounding maybe composed, I was actually, you know, it's not fun to have those kind of confrontations with other people. So he ended up coming back and I said, I respect, like, this is coming from a place of care and concern and you know, obviously wanting to have control of the variables and in your mind being as safe as possible. But, and I said, I was planning on having a hospital birth, but they took away the option for a water birth. And I think if you're going to advocate for moms to be in hospital, then you at the same time need to advocate for moms to be able to have unmedicated or physiologic birth in hospital. And he was like, yeah, you're totally right. And then kind of shared a little bit more of his perspective on that and agreed, you know, largely it's limitations on resources and staff. You know, we don't have the time or the facilities to, you know, have moms in there for 36 hours, every single mom, right? It's let's get them on Pitocin, let's get things going. So anyway, it ended up being what I would say is a positive experience. I think I felt more sure in going into things the way that I wanted, but I still wasn't sure on a birth location. And ultimately, I just said, to my husband, I want you to make this decision for me. I think you know what I want, but I want it to be like a decision that you make in leading our family into whatever is best, because I don't feel confident in how I'm feeling. And so he said, I think you want to be at the birth center, honey, which is also very close. It was about equidistant to the hospital, just on the other side. It was, I think it was 20 minutes away. So anyhow, we'll get to the birth. I had a blizzard the night before. I would recommend everybody do that, because I think that's what put me into labor. No, I remember saying to my, so it's the day after my due date is when I went into labor. And on my due date, I kind of said to baby, okay, you want to come? I'm ready. It's up to you, but I'm ready. And there was lots of little prayers that I had prayed about how this would happen, how things would unfold. And every single one was answered, including I said, if it's going to be during the week, can it be a day birth so that we can pop my son into daycare, which he goes to like, you know, once or twice a week. And then we can just pick him up on the way home and come back. So I got my first contractions, I think around, I have a little card here that my doula made for me. She's wonderful. 3:30 or so in the morning. They weren't horrible, but I thought, oh, these feel stronger than the ones before, because I had had one night of prodromal labor maybe a week before. And they didn't get closer together, but they felt intense. And then around 5 or 6 or so, I think it was around 5, I got out of bed and I went downstairs and I could feel I was just shaking and I was a little bit nauseous. And I thought, okay, this is the real deal, because I'm just flooded with epinephrine right now. I felt so nervous. And my husband's kind of walking around the house. He didn't know where I was. And I texted him and I was like, hey, what are you doing? Like, honey, what's up? Where are you? I'm like, oh, I'm in labor on the couch. So I just kind of labored. My contractions were really not that long, which I felt was a saving grace. They were intense, really intense, but they weren't that long. So I was coming to the peak and then thought, okay, I can do this. But I thought, holy moly, like I'm, you know, those stories of women that say they're having all this pain, then they go to the hospital and they're like 1 centimeter dilated. Like, that's me right now for sure. Like, this just started. So yeah, I just labored. He came in, my son came in, and then when I would have a contraction, my son was like hugging me and we were playing, and then I'd have a contraction. I said, oh, I'll take him. And I would just try and ride it. And I eventually remembered, like, okay, you need to breathe through these to make them manageable. So I started doing that. And then I just started doing those moaning sounds. I don't know what your experience was, Paige, but just like, I'm not going to do it on the podcast right now, but I just started making those sounds. That, yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
So funny.
It's
great. Like, we love that.
Yeah. It's just like what your body does. Yeah. So much of the entire birth experience was, I just feel like, you know how I said that the C-section, it didn't play a role. Funny enough, I feel the same way. Like, my body did it. I didn't do it. My body did it.
There you go.
But in it, kind of in a different light. So we called my doula and my midwife back to back, because I had texted her and said, like, hey, I think today's the day. And she's like, okay, well, things, you know, can, it's normal if things slow down or whatever, like kind of thinking, you know, probably not. But then they listened to me breathe and moan a little bit. And they thought, okay, Alex, let's, and they told Levi, this is all, I'm reading it off the sheet because I really don't remember most of it. Told Levi to put me in a shower, and that will either kind of slow things down or kind of keep them going and speed them up. So he did, and the hot water was nice, but I wasn't that comfortable because our tub is not huge. So I felt like I was kind of squished in there. And I thought I had like 4 contractions in there. And then he said, okay, you can get out. And I couldn't eat anything. So he was like feeding me orange juice through this little glass with a straw. And then he called them back and he's like, okay, she was in there for about 45, 50 minutes. And I was, looked at him. I'm like, what? Like, it snapped me out of this labor world that I was in. Like, no, that was like 5, maybe 10 minutes, not 45 minutes. So they said, we're going to meet you at the birth center. You guys need to go like pretty soon. So apparently, again, this is unbeknownst to me because my recollection is so fuzzy in a cool way. It took me an hour to get from our room to downstairs, and it's literally just stairs. That's all it is. There's nothing else happening. Like, I go out my door, I walk down my stairs, and then we're at the front door. So he tried to dress me. That wasn't working. We ended up, I showed up to the birth center in a robe and my slippers. That's what I was wearing, because I was like, I just can't. And he had kind of prep the seat, and he opened the back of the vehicle, his SUV, and I was like, "That's I want to go in the back." So he put like our dog's bed there and some blankets, and I ended up getting in the back of the SUV, and we started driving. Mind you, like there was no part of me that was like, "How far along am I?" I just thought like this just started, like active labor. I think we said it started around, around 10 ish. So like I have hours to go. Like my mom told me she had 8 hour labors or so. I'm like, for sure, I gotta just buckle in. And my husband says, I did say like, I can't do this a couple times. Like just take me to the hospital. He said, you're doing great, babe. Keep it up. Just like completely ignored me, which I kind of had told him to do, obviously. I think my doula was like, where are we going to the birth center, right? Or is that what we're doing? And he was just like, yeah, because probably it would have been like, oh, I don't know if I can do it. So we drove to the birth center. It apparently took us 20 minutes. Again, it felt like 5. And we showed up, and my doula has the most hilarious picture of me in the back, because she opened the front and was like, oh, Alex isn't in here. And then opened the back, and there was 2 car seats. And he was like, she said to Levi, my husband, did you forget your wife? And then heard me in the back and opened the back of the vehicle, and there he was. So finished the contraction in there. She said, okay, when you're done this one, we're going to rip into the room. We'll get you settled. And I just remember, like, I felt like I was walking through, like, quicksand. Like, I got to get to this room. I got to get there. And as soon as I walked through the door, contractions started, and I just fell to the ground. I think 98% of my contractions. No, all good. I had to take on my hands and knees. Like, that's just where my body went. I just was down. No option. That's just the position I had to be in. So I fell through the door. And of course, they knew I was planning a water birth. So I said, Alex, the tub is ready already. Like, you can get in whenever you want. I just ignored everyone. I was like, I can't move. I'm not going anywhere. I was on the floor. So eventually, I think I crawled forward a little bit. Well, I think I skipped over. My husband had applied a TENS machine that I had bought, and that was helpful. I really did find it helpful, just in a distracting way. So we apparently got, I'm looking at my notes here, we got to the birth center at 12:22, and then I went in the door, was laboring, and 10 minutes later, my water broke. That contraction was probably the worst out of all of them, I swear. I remember thinking, why is this one taking so long? And it was so intense, and then just poof, this big pop. And then I said, I was wearing like my NYX underwear, and I remember I said, water, and then everyone's fussing, like trying to get me some water. I'm like, no, that's, and I just couldn't explain what I meant, but eventually they like lift up my robe and were like, oh, her water just broke, like things are moving. So of course they take that off, and then 6 minutes after my water broke, my body just started pushing. And I loved hearing all those stories about women like saying, I pushed, or my body started. And, you know, whatever your experience is, it's so cool. But yeah, I just started, like, making that sound again. I don't want to make it because it's hilarious. But if you've been there, you know, or if you've seen it, you know, your body just starts doing it. It was just so wild. I really feel like I did nothing. So for me, I did definitely have the fetal ejection reflex. I did not push. My body just did it all. There was no pushing, and absolutely for me, it was not the hardest part or the worst part. It was you're still contracting, so obviously it was difficult. I remember it feeling challenging, but I didn't feel like I had any control over how it was going. I just had to surrender to it. Essentially, was probably how I felt. And then I think, let me just see. Yeah, it was maybe 40 minutes after that my baby had came. So we didn't know what we were having. It was the same with my son, and my husband had told me. And then same for this. So baby came out, I was on my hands and knees, and my midwife caught baby, and then I remember my doula took a video, but she said, I just said, I don't want to know, like just wait. And so they handed her to me right through, and I just picked her up and held her. I didn't know it was a daughter or my daughter at that point. And they just kind of rocked, and that was definitely one of the most amazing feelings in my life, just having her right there. And I just had this sense of like, she needs me and I'm here for her. Like, this is right. This is how it's supposed to be. So it was such a beautiful thing. So I just took a couple minutes and just basked in that. And then I said to my husband, okay, tell me. And for whatever reason, I thought for sure I was having a boy. I was very convinced with my first that I was. And I was. I should add some context. Part of it, my friend had given me this cross stitch of some sheep with a shepherd, and it was John 10:11, and it starts, I am the good shepherd. And our name for a boy at that time was shepherd. And I was like, okay, God, I hear you. We're having a boy. So I even started getting boy clothes, and my husband was like, honey, it could be a girl. Like, no, it's a boy. So I didn't have that level of confidence this time, but I thought for sure it was a boy. But when he said it's a girl, oh my gosh, that is the most shocked I've ever been in my life. Completely. I can't remember ever being that surprised. So that was really amazing. And then, yeah, they just said, you know, do you want to come to the bed? I think actually, yeah, I delivered my placenta up there on the bed, which was easy. They just said, yeah, just give a little push and popped out. That was lovely. I think I glossed over the tub part. They had asked me a few more times, like, do you want to get into the tub? And I just ignored them. And afterwards, they realized, like, you were just in the zone. We just wanted you to know that was an option, which obviously was lovely because it's a big, beautiful cup. But I just remember, like, can't. And another weird thing that was happening, my husband, when he would touch me, I would get so, like, upset. I didn't want him to touch me. I wanted him to be there in front of me. But I was like, you can't touch me. And all I wanted was my doula's hands because she was, like, shaking me and moving me. It was, I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, I need this. Like, if she wasn't doing this, I would die. Like, she's saving me.
Through, wow, like, there you go. Pushing.
Oh my goodness. Like, I can't, it's almost ineffable. I don't have the words to describe how much I needed what she was doing. And we never talked about anything that she was going to do. She just knew exactly what I needed, which was so cool.
That's great.
So for pain management, doula. That is my advice.
Doula. So you said she did shaking the apples, maybe some counter pressure type things.
Uh-huh, and,
okay. Uh-huh. Awesome.
Yeah, it was so needed. Anyway, yeah, got back up on the bed and then delivered the placenta and had my daughter on my chest and she was just kind of hanging out, and eventually she latched and it was so cool. The birth center also, it's pretty swanky. They give you these like cinnamon pancakes and waffles, and these like parfait and all this stuff. And with my first, we had to stay in the hospital for 3 nights and didn't sleep. And then this one was like, you know, 3 hours after birth and then got to go home. So it was just such a great experience for so many different reasons. But yeah, so cool. I remember also one other kind of feeling that I really think back when I think about my birth was when I had kind of fallen through the door in the birth center and fell to the floor. I felt like I was at my lowest in my life, in a sense, like physically, I am not coping. Obviously, I was, but I just felt so vulnerable, I guess, with the weight. And my midwife and the backup midwife and my doula kind of all like rushed around me and had hands on me. And I just felt like, wow, this is so powerful. Like, these women just have me, they're taking care of me. I'm just fully covered by like their presence and their power and their, yeah, just like the skill and the love that they had in that moment and throughout the birth. It was incredible. And I, again, that's not something I would have ever thought, this is what I want. But boy, did I need it in that moment. It was so powerful to just have these women just help me get, you know, from one side to the other, bring our daughter into this world. It's so beautiful.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So then my husband cut the cord and we just hung out. It was pretty funny going home. We didn't actually share with many people that we were having a birth center birth. I had told my mom, but nobody was thinking we would be home that quick. So then my brother-in-law and my sister were here at my house with my son. And when we were coming home, I had texted my brother-in-law and said, we're on our way back. And then he told my sister, and I'm like, oh, she probably was false labor. Like, you know, they're coming back. So we got out of the car and my husband has the car seat. And my sister was like, is there a baby? What? You have a baby? And they were just absolutely floored, which is hilarious because, of course, they didn't think we'd be home. So,
that's so awesome.
Yeah, Yeah, it was cool. So then I got to, you know, FaceTime my mom and my husband's mom and had the baby right there. And again, they were just absolutely shocked because nobody thought that that's what was going on that day. And we were home by, I think it was like 4 or 5 or something. So it was cool.
Wow. That is, that's like the perfect hybrid between going somewhere and having your team and not having the birth right there at home like you didn't really want, but then you still have the comfort of your home and you're right back there quickly. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about what the postpartum follow-up, when was your VBAC? How old is your baby?
Yeah, she is almost 8 weeks.
So just barely.
Yeah.
Amazing. So since you're still fresh, postpartum fresh, how has your recovery been? What has the follow-up care been like with your midwives in the birth center?
Yeah. Midwife, 10 out of 10, 11 out of 10. Couldn't even say more. It was funny with my husband, again, being a physician. She had come over several times, like for all the postpartum visits. And I think I was supposed to go to her and she was like, oh, I'll just come to you. And he said, man, she makes our postpartum care look like some crap. Like, yeah, she really does, because she was just so caring and lovely to be willing to be here. That was amazing, and recovery was good. I really didn't feel like my C-section recovery was all that bad either. I mean, of course, it's painful. The one thing I will say was, I think with the C-scar for me and my experience, you can brace it a little bit more easily. Of course, you use your abdomen, you know, for most things, but I wasn't in pain when I was sitting and things like that. Whereas this time I ended up with a second degree tear and it was painful for a while. It was more painful, maybe, let's say. Also hard to say because I'm fresh off it, so maybe that's just my memory, but then it dissipated once I kind of healed. Whereas with the C-section, maybe I was kind of restricted for longer, I guess is probably how I would compare them, but both were good. I certainly didn't have any big complications and kind of could manage with some Tylenol, so it was fine.
Okay, and what about breastfeeding?
Yeah, I don't want to get into the weeds with you, Paige, on that one, but apparently my son, my husband and I just make babies that have oral dysfunction, so that is another thing we're dealing with. She also had some tethered oral tissue, but I was practiced enough to recognize it right away, like, oh, something's kind of off here, and a seasoned pumper. So I'm actually working with like a speech language pathologist, an IDCLC, a breastfeeding medicine physician, a whole gambit of people to kind of help her dysfunction, because she does really struggle. We'll probably do some swallowing studies and stuff in the next little bit here, but I would still say I'm very grateful. She doesn't drink a whole lot of milk, so I've got we had to buy a freezer and stuff to store all the milk that I'm making, which is great. So I would say, I guess, for maybe women that experience disappointment in C-sections and thinking how much it impacts your breastfeeding journey, I was sure, my husband and I were so sure that that was why my son struggled and kind of colored that experience. And, you know, unfortunately, but that's not the case. Like I had one from a sleepy C-section baby to a very spry, unmedicated BBAC baby who has the same challenges. So, I think I still have a healthy baby. I'm healthy. Like, she's growing very well. She's growing more than she needs to. So I should really just be looking at the positive side there and be grateful for all the things that we do have. But that would be the difference.
And that's the thing. Like, birth is just hard. Postpartum is hard. Parenting is hard. There are hard pieces within all of it, and it's nuanced and it's a mixed bag. But I think that that's important what you say is, like, we can let go as C-section moms. We can let go of some of the guilt, assuming that, oh, if I had this other experience, like, that would be better. That would be better. That it would all be perfect. Mm-hmm. And I know even Lily, she had some breastfeeding difficulties after her VBAC too. So it's hard to say, but like, an empowering birth experience does help. It does help how you cope with some of these postpartum challenges. Mm-hmm. It can help when you're physically feeling a little bit more present to be there for your baby who needs things. And, you know, it's, I think it's just finding the support and being equipped to handle these challenges when they present themselves. 'Cause that's just life too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, as challenging as it was with my son, we look at him and he's just like this, you know, everybody feels this way about their kid, but language off the charts and eats so well and all these things. So I'm not concerned about future issues, but you're right. Definitely it is a difficult season, but as one of my new favorite books is titled, Hard is Not the Same Thing as Bad. And this is just the, this is just the season where I get to give a little bit more to my daughter and sacrifice a lot for her. And it's not going to last forever. And one day I'm going to want it back. So it's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, that's a great perspective that you have. Well, there's so much about your story that I'm glad you dove into. Specifically, that conversation with the doctor was something that I read in your story that I wanted to know more about. So I'm glad that you really dove into that. And also to say how you kept your composure. Obviously, that nurse was really impressed, but then you still felt it in your body, that kind of rush of adrenaline, because those conversations are hard. They're not easy to have. Yeah. They are hard. But then to pivot and go to your team that you felt so safe with in the depths of labor, and for your body to know and recognize and feel safe even in the throes of it all. Like, I just think over and over again, birth is hard enough. Birth is hard. There are moments where you will question life itself sometimes and where you hit the wall because it pushes you, and that's the mystery and the magic of it all. And how beautiful for you then to see what you're capable of and for your support team to come and pull you out of that. Like, I love that so much. I did have a question. Mm-hmm. Sometimes quicker labors or precipitous feedbacks mm-hmm. can be unique to process in their own ways. Mm-hmm. Have you experienced that a little bit?
I think I just felt a little... I couldn't really process it right away because I definitely did not think it would go that quickly. Obviously, you know, we were leaving the house. And I remember thinking, I've got 6 hours, at least 8 hours, not one or two. It certainly wasn't traumatic, but I remember thinking, I don't know if I can do that again. That was so hard. Like, it was so intense. Absolutely the most intense thing I've ever experienced in my life. But I don't know if it's biology and our wiring to have more babies, but slowly that was just kind of dissipating. And it went from like, that was so hard. And now she's like, I'm so, wow, look, like I did that. I got to do that again. You know, like you just, it kind of turns into this pride and this gratitude for your body and the ability and kind of the people that support you and surround you in doing it and empower you to do it. Right. And like you said earlier, about that conversation with the MFM, it really made me think about, like, I wish that, you know, every woman could have a doula with them all the time, because I have those conversations all the time in hospital when we're kind of, you know, judging like the clinical picture or whatever in terms of evidence as this or not. And that's normal for me. But for somebody that doesn't have those conversations on the regular, like, you're so right. That's so difficult. And it's really hard to advocate for yourself. And I found it challenging. And I feel like I do it all the time. So yeah, just kudos to the women that can do it. And I think birth definitely should be like a team effort. If that's what you want, if that's what you're comfortable with, like just absolutely surrounding yourself with all the people that are going to empower you to kind of go for what you want.
Yeah. I saw on Instagram the other day, an influencer, she's waiting for her VBAC, and she was talking about how she got a message that was like, oh, prodromal labor is really common in VBAC, and you should just expect that you'll have prodromal labor and you'll go really far past your due date and your labor is going to be really, really, really long because that's just how VBACs are because of the scar. And I think your story is really powerful to show that that is not evidence-based. Like, maybe that happens to some women, but like, VBACs happen all the time very quickly, and they can happen post-dates. They can happen before your due date. They can happen a day after your due date. Like, it's just a mixed bag because that's how birth goes. So
totally,
ruptured. To share them.
Sorry, I was going to add, ruptured didn't even cross my mind. I remember my midwife a couple times asking, like, any pain at your scar? I'm like, no. Any pain at your scar? No. like, no pain. I'm totally fine. It wasn't even in my wheelhouse. There was no consideration of that for me. I'm sure that wasn't the case for my midwife, but no fear for sure. My body just took over and my team took over, and yeah, it was wonderful.
That's so good. Oh, so great. Okay. Is there anything else you want to add before we close out today? Any tips for VBAC moms prepping?
You know, I would say don't put too much pressure on yourself to do it a certain way. I think VBAC moms, I don't think anybody can relate to being a VBAC mom unless you are a VBAC mom, whether you've gotten a VBAC or you had a CBAC or whatever you had, because like my friends that didn't have C-sections and they could tell how much it meant to me. I don't think they really can understand, and that's totally fine. But I would say, trust your instincts. And I guess the people that you trust as well, because I let my husband lead me in that decision. I might not have come to the same decision. And had I been in the hospital, I would have gotten an epidural. Maybe things would have changed. Maybe they wouldn't. But I'm grateful that I expressed what I wanted, and he kind of talked me into doing it, because yeah, there's so many variables and things can change quickly, like you said. So, and just be confident in yourself too.
Oh, so good. Well, thank you for joining us today, Alex. We loved having you. I know that your story is going to help inspire our community. We've loved having you a part of our community, listening to all of our episodes, and just thank you for joining us.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much, Paige.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.